We're going to be heading into the sermon here now. That part's over. Now's the sermon. I just want to touch base with the series that we're going through. Last week, Aaron introduced our Lenten series, which is exploring the question of what actually happened on the cross. We got to hear a bunch of diverse perspectives. Last year, we got to see a little video where people talked about some older ways that they had known what the cross is, and new ways of being that they had found, new stories of the cross that gave them life. And others found that they were able to enter new depths in the understanding that they grew up with that gave them life. The cross it's a mystery. It's the center of the human story, the center of the Christian faith. But it escapes human reasoning. It refracts into a million unique pictures that we can all look at. And each explanation gives us a glimpse of the mystery of God. Or I like this explanation. Put differently, we can clip new pages into an ever-growing binder of our understanding of God with every understanding of the cross we gain. Feminist writers have taught me to hold a thick reading of scripture, a thick reading of the Bible, a thick understanding of God. Because this honors the uniqueness of our experiences and that God desires to connect with us uniquely. We can find new ways of knowing God in each season and hold empathy for those whose explanation of the cross needs to be different from our own. Because God meets us there, and that's a beautiful thing. So today, I'm going to look at one of those perspectives. We're going to focus on this gospel reading that was read earlier. I guess I did that. This is from Luke 22. So Jesus is committing himself to the cross, and he starts his journey there with being arrested. And I believe this tackles some really big things. Suffering amid violent powers of the world. Heavy stuff for a Sunday morning. Probably helpful. Guess we'll see. I will admit I had a hard time pulling this sermon together, but I had an epiphany at about 9 o'clock last night. So that's I'm a little bit tired this morning, if you can't tell. So we'll get through it. We'll get through it. So although, like many of us, I grew up with an understanding of the cross being a mechanism for washing away our sins, underneath was this other story. That the cross is a path of suffering that we're invited to take. Jesus willingly took this path of suffering so I could endure suffering as well. And this came out of the stories I heard in my family when I was growing up. Like some folks here, or their ancestors grew up in Russia, in Stalin's Russia as a Mennonite. My grandpa's father was faultlessly executed by the state, and his family's property was seized. His brothers built a mud hut that he grew up in, and they had a board on the floor that he would hide under to hide from the police when they came by, the Soviet police. But they escaped Russia, and God provided a way through miraculous means. It's a beautiful story. And like Jesus, in their struggle, they were strengthened. And God brought them new life amid their suffering. My family saw suffering as a path set before them, set by Jesus' journey to the cross. But is this really good news? Does the cross not provide a way out of suffering? Because last time I checked, suffering is bad. And haven't we had enough? Haven't we had enough of the world's powerful bringing suffering to the weak? In a world where we have devastation in Gaza and Ukraine and beyond there, billionaires are going on joy rides in space while children starve, where people sleep on the streets in this very neighborhood while the mayor cancels low-income housing initiatives. Does God really respond with the cross? Is that the response that God gives? And there's sufferings more personal that I haven't named here. Sufferings in our families and in our lives. I know some of those sufferings have brought us here to this community, and some are still continuing. Sometimes it's just so much that we grow numb because the sufferings around us are too large to hold. God is supposed to be a refuge. How can it be good news that Jesus chose the path of suffering and invites us to do the same? Can we really trust a God that allows this violence and then invites us to suffer too? Let's hold on to these questions and let's dive into the gospel story so that we can hopefully gain a little insight. So after his last supper with his friends, Jesus climbs the hill, and he's gone there so often because that's where he feels close with the Creator. He knows that he needs to be close with the Creator now as he enters the greatest trial of suffering in his ministry. His disciples follow, and he tells them to pray so they won't succumb to the trials ahead. He's pulled away, and he falls on his knees, and he says, "Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." This is a crucial moment. This is where Jesus turned his will to follow this path of suffering. I like the way James Edwards, he's a scholar, he writes it this way. On the Mount of Olives, Jesus' soul is crucified. On the Mount of Calvary, his body surrendered. Jesus sets himself on this path in this moment. And Luke inserts, this is unique to Luke, he inserts two images here that provide a deeper insight into this moment. An angel shows up and strengthens Jesus, showing God's presence and the need for strength to follow this path. And in Jesus' anguish, he sweats drops of blood, showing his inner resolve and the suffering he's feeling in choosing this path. He returns to the disciples and finds them exhausted by their sorrow to the point of sleep. Knowing what's ahead of them, he tells them again to pray. But it's too late. The crowds arrive, led by Judas, to arrest Jesus. Judas approaches, and Jesus greets him with a customary kiss. Really? He's signaling his arrest with a sign of friendship. Then it gets a little chaotic for a moment, where the disciples bring out swords and slice off a high priest's ear. And Jesus responds, "No more of this." And he touches the ear of the servant and heals it. Then he points to the obvious contrast going on here, the obvious contrast between those around him and the crowds equipped with weapons and poised for violence, and Jesus' posture of calm, nonviolence. And at the end of the episode, he says this, "But this is your hour when darkness reigns." I find this last statement really unsettling. "But this is your hour when darkness reigns." The darkness of violence saturates this moment, and there's layers of violence going on here. I think that the gospel story here peels back a curtain to show what's really going on in this story, but also in our world. We see a crowd sent by the religious elite who have partnered with the Roman invaders to keep their power and protect the Jewish way of life with some compromises. They enacted Roman violence in order to maintain their power because they needed to protect the Jewish way of life. And in that, now they're arresting a person who embodies their tradition, their sacred law, and the prophets because it challenged Roman exploitation and the religious leaders' allegiance to it. Jesus sees this growing tension, and he knew that their path would lead to arrest or even execution. So he seizes the moment to join with these other powers. Now there's layers here with Judas and the religious leaders and the Romans. Why did he do this? Was it to push Jesus to bring the kingdom by force? I don't know. But this was one of Jesus' best friends, and now he was enwrapped in violence too. And finally, the disciples, in the heat of the moment, they want to seize control too. They try to take charge with force and violence. And they brought harm to a servant, and read their slave is the same word in Greek. One of the most vulnerable people at the scene. Isn't that how it always is? Isn't it always the most vulnerable who are hurt when we try to seize power? There's layers upon layers here. And I'm defining violence very specifically here. And here's my definition. Violence happens when we hold coercive power over others to control an outcome. Although the goal is to bring an end to suffering, the means of the powerful bring harm to those who are being controlled. When we try to take forceful control of the situation, others to force an outcome, this can lead to violence when others don't comply. And this is the great lie of coercive power. When we see suffering and try to take control, we believe that we can end the suffering, but we just perpetuate it. If only we can force others to do what we think is right, we can stop the suffering we experience and the suffering of others. This is the lie behind so many wars, behind abusive relationships, behind violent government policies, behind the physical, psychological, and spiritual violence that has caused so much trauma. In the face of suffering, the desire is to take control because it seems so attractive. It seems like it could be the answer. It seems like it could stop everything. The gospel pulls back the curtain and to reveal the violence behind it. Violence produces violence, spiraling from the top downward, spreading to every heart. This is what the cross shows us. It shows us what happens when we take this course of control. The cross shows us the blindness of this way of being. When a perfect person, God in the flesh, came to bring the message of peace and healing into the world, God is executed. The cross's power is in showing us this reality. God came at a time when God knew this would happen. I really like the way this New Testament scholar, John Dominic Crossan, puts it. God knew from all eternity that when God sent the Messiah, the greatest empire the world had ever known would execute him. Why did God send the Messiah at this time? It was to reveal the savage heart of civilization. So what is the cross here? The cross is a mirror for humanity. In the face of suffering, the human temptation is to take control. This produces more suffering. The cycle of human suffering is not halted, and instead it snowballs, and a Messiah is killed. So I see a lot of these things in my life, in my heart. And I think the place where it comes out most often is when I'm cycling. I love to ride my bike. It's my favorite way to commute. But when I'm biking, I can really be a self-righteous peddler. Let's call it that. So I believe that if everyone knows the rules of the road and follows them, that everything will probably be okay. But there needs to be some education around vehicles and cyclists going sharing the road together. And so what I do is I use the little power that I have on my little bicycle, this little man on a little bike, and I make drivers feel bad when they don't follow the rules. And if somebody is ushering me to go when I know it's there right away, I refuse to go. This is me holding the little bit of power I have to bring violence into the hearts of these people. I know I'm doing terrible things for the cyclist community. I'm really sorry, but I'm working on it. Yeah, I'm trying to be better. But isn't that true? It goes deeper than that. When we look at, I know the reactions I had in my heart that I'm not proud of when there was an assassination attempt on the president. Wow, really? That's in my heart. Or when I look at the situations going on in the world, situation in the downtown East Side, if only people did the right thing, if only the right people were in power here, really, is that solving the situation? When we believe that we can take power to solve things, when we can force other people to do the right thing, that perpetuates that violence. That violence sits in our heart and spreads everywhere. It's all around us. It's hard to escape. But the thing is, this isn't the end. And I would add to Crossan's quote, I would add that this moment leading to the cross not only shows us who we are, but also who God is. Let's go back to that moment in the Mount of Olives in the garden where Jesus was on his knees. I think something really important is happening here. In the face of impending violence, when all the other players are doing everything they can to take control, Jesus gets on his knees and he says, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." So I'm going to take a moment first to acknowledge the first part of that statement. Jesus knows suffering and violence are ahead of him, and he asks for an opportunity to avoid it. Jesus validates that suffering is not good. And I think that needs to be said here, because I think sometimes the message is sent to us that, yeah, suffering is should. We should embrace it when we get the opportunity, and suffering is good. The thing is, it never is. In fact, Jesus does everything he can within the posture of obedience to God to avoid his impending suffering in the situation. If you read on the story when he's put in on trial, he gives incredibly vague answers to the jury as to why he's, you know, being incriminated. Anything he can do to avoid judgment. Suffering is not good, and even Jesus, who knows what's ahead, he knows that new life is coming, tries to avoid it. In the second part of this statement, Jesus fully submits to the will of God, the creator of the universe, the one who watches over all of time, the one who sustains the universe, watching over the lifespan of stars and every blade of grass and microbe, gets on his knees and submits to God's will. He chooses a fully human state in solidarity with humanity. Jesus chose vulnerability. He sheds the garments of control that we guard ourselves with. Jesus embraced mortality, fragility, loneliness, and dependency at a moment before taking the road to the cross. And in this moment, he chose to submit to God's will, praying, "Not my will, but yours be done." His choice is to face suffering, trusting that God holds a bigger picture. He chose full dependence on God for control of this circumstance. And rather than seizing control as the world promotes, he chose submission. He combats this image of self-autonomy and independence that our culture promotes as holy. In this case, vulnerability is shown as holiness. That's the holiness that Jesus embodies when he's on his knees in Gethsemane. And this is the way that God does things. God invites us to trust him in the face of suffering. Taking control results in the perpetuation of violence. Taking control results in the perpetuation of violence. This is not the only way. Jesus' way of nonviolence and dependence upon God offers a way forward that trusts God's power and avoids the cycle of violence, this thing that we're all trapped in. This is the cross that the one who had the power to take control chose nonviolent dependence on God and gave his life to follow this nonviolent path. He trusted that God was doing something bigger than his suffering and the suffering of those around him. This is who God is. Just as the cross stands as a mirror for the violence of coercive control in the world and in our hearts, it is a window into who God is. A God who refuses to succumb to violence. God refuses to take coercive control. God refuses to play this game of violent coercion. God is so committed to the path of nonviolence in the midst of a world of suffering that he came down to be among suffering, to bring healing and life and tread a path of suffering. He would be convicted, arrested, and executed for treason. This is how committed God is to this path. God is not a God of violence. This is who God is, and the cross stands as a beacon to us across history, showing us that God will die before taking course of control. God is a God of life. God is a God of renewal. God is a God that feeds the sparrows and clothes the lilies of the field, who waters mountains, as the Psalms say, who brings hope to the hopeless, who comforts the brokenhearted, who brings life out of death. At Easter, God could not be held back by death. God rose from the dead, Death lost. It lost. Death could not overcome the life-giving power of God. God's life-giving power overcomes. Darkness may have its day, like the end of the song, end of the gospel reading said, but the light will always overcome it. The way of the cross is hope against suffering. As Alex Maurice preached to us last spring, hope brings narratives of the past and the future into the present moment. We kind of get to be like time travelers when we're in this place of hope. We take the story of the cross, of Jesus' example of nonviolent suffering in the face of suffering, and how God transformed his death into new life into the present moment. And we take with us the expectation that God will bring new life, not only in spite of suffering, but also through the suffering we experience, because that is what God does. This is the message of the cross. So what about all that weird Old Testament violence stuff? Well, I don't know. This is actually something I put a good amount of thought into, and I think I wouldn't do it justice talking about it here, but I'm continuing to wrestle with it. It's a challenge, and I'd be happy to chat over coffee if you want to. I'd love to do that, and I'd love to have any of your voices as part of my journey. So Jesus offers a way to escape the cycles of coercive control and violence by inviting us to join a path of nonviolence. God is in the business of renewing all things, and God invites us to participate. So this is who God is, and this is who God is asking us to be in the midst of it. So God presents a radical path in the face of suffering in the world, where the reaction to suffering is normally to seize control. And this is hard, and the gospel story recognizes that. It also gives a lot of grace. And I want to go through the gospel story again, focusing on the disciples to see their model of following Jesus' path. So this is Luke 22:39-53 from focusing on the disciples, or from their perspective. So Luke says that Jesus goes to the Mount of Olives and the disciples follow them by their own volition. So credit to them. They choose to follow. They choose to follow Jesus on his path to the cross. And Jesus stands with them through the whole episode, giving them instructions and guiding them on this path. They're asked to pray so they won't fall into temptation or into the time of trial. And they pray, but they're overcome. The suffering is too much, it's too hard, so they take a nap. Jesus reminds, sometimes we need to take a nap, that's true. Jesus reminds them to pray and depend on God for strength. And in our exhaustion, in our suffering, Jesus comes alongside us. That's a model of the way that Jesus behaves. When we need strength, we share in Jesus' comfort alongside suffering, as Paul reminds us in 2 Corinthians. Then the mob comes to arrest Jesus. The disciples immediately forget everything. They see what's going on. They ask, Lord, should we strike with our swords? They don't wait for a response, and they lop a guy's ear off. And this guy has nothing to do with Jesus' arrest. Jesus whips around and says, no more of this, and heals the ear of the slave. So was all that prayer for nothing? Jesus was literally just telling them to bolster themselves in the time of trial. And when the trial comes, they're lopping off minor appendages. Yeah, Jesus is there with us. Jesus tells us when we've crossed the line. If we listen to that voice, we are guided back into the path of nonviolence. The disciples, they really look bad here. And maybe Luke is throwing shade at the disciples. I don't know if there was some sort of beef going on between Luke and the disciples. Maybe. But I think even more so, this is showing us how hard this path is. And it's showing us ourselves. And it's showing us who Jesus is to us in the midst of that. We depend upon God to guide us and help take us through the nonviolent path. All of this comes back to a posture of dependence. We come to our knees in a time of suffering to seek a path through violence, because we can't do it alone, and we're not meant to. In the face of suffering, God provides an alternative path to coercive control, the one that perpetuates violence. God walks this path of nonviolence, refusing to succumb to the world's way of seizing control to fix suffering. Instead, God enters with us. And out of suffering, God brings life, because that's what God does. God continues to bring life and invites us into the activity of making all things new. It's the slogan of the church. Wow, he dropped that. This is not a journey we're meant to perfect, but a posture we learn to hold. This is a posture of dependence and learning and leaning upon God's nonviolent way of bringing renewal. This is the vision we hold when suffering surrounds us and enters our life. The cross gives us a picture into God's way of bringing renewal. The suffering of the cross is good news because it shows us that God can be trusted. God can be trusted in suffering, and that God is providing a way forward through the cross. When I read this story, I think there's some important echoes of the Lord's Prayer. Some are really explicit and some are more implicit. Jesus reminding the disciples not to come into the time of trial. Jesus saying, "Your will be done." And I don't believe this is an accident. I believe Luke is reminding us of the vision of the Lord's Prayer and what it provides here. It asks that God's will be done, as Jesus said, for a nonviolent way to break into the midst of coercive control and to bring an end to suffering. For God's kingdom to come is so that the poor in spirit, those who mourn, the lowly, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness are satisfied. It's a posture of submission to the dependence on God to equip us to join God's activity as God's kingdom advances, that those who desire to bring mercy, those who want to purify their hearts, who desire to bring peace and stand in opposition to exploiters, will be given the strength to follow this difficult path. So this is how I want to end today, this with this vision. And if you feel like this is helpful, maybe saying the Lord's Prayer can be a Lenten practice for you, something to help you hold this vision of God's work in the world, who God is. God is not a violent God. God is bringing a way of peace through the cross. God is bringing life through death. So I want to invite us to say the Lord's Prayer together as we move into the table here, as a way of capturing this vision, holding this vision of the cross, of what God's up to here and now, and why the cross is important. So let's say the Lord's Prayer together. Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Lead us not into the time of trial, but deliver us from the evil one. For yours is the kingdom, the power and the glory forever and ever.